This is the Education Exchange with Paul Peterson. I am the senior editor at Education Next. Thank you for joining us. A year ago, the Chicago Teachers Union played a key role in electing Brandon Johnson, the city's mayor. Johnson is a former public school teacher and a union organizer, so the union had achieved a major victory, and now it wants payback. Carl Sandburg called Chicago the city of big shoulders, and it's living up to its name. The union is using its big shoulders in an attempt to grab a $51,000 across-the-board pay increase over the next 3 years that will bring average teacher salaries up to $145,000 a year. Not bad. Well, the Chicago Teachers Union is headed by a very energetic woman. Her name is Stacey Davis Gates, and she's an outspoken opponent of school choice. A few years ago, when the legislature enacted a law that gave tax credit scholarships to help poor kids go to private schools, they did so over the opposition of the union. But the union got the last word, because in the last session of the legislature, it reversed that law, sending kids back to public schools. And in the midst of these battles, Stacey Davis Gates said school choice was the choice of racists. It was created to avoid integrating schools with Black children. My children go to Chicago public schools, she said. But it turns out that Ms. Gates sends her own son to a Catholic school. Well, she got criticized for this, and then she attacked those who revealed the practice by saying they're targeting children. They're exposing them to harm. They're collaborating with extremist, racist, and anti-worker forces. That's not debate, and that cannot be excused. But then she adds a line that could have been written by a senior fellow at the American Federation of Children. She says, and this is a direct quote, "Options for Black students, their families, and entire Black communities on this city's South and West Side are limited." Yet she opposed expanding those options when, at the time, she was sending her own child to a Catholic school. So I'm pleased to have a senior fellow at the American Federation of Children to discuss this topic with me. He's Corey DeAngelis. Corey, thank you for joining me on the Education Exchange.
Hey, thank you so much, Paul. It's good to be here.
Well, Corey, do you feel guilty of targeting children with extremist, racist, and anti-worker language? How do you respond to these charges?
I mean, when your opponents just start to call everything racist, you know you're probably winning, because they have no logical argument against your position. But look, she's really just diverting your attention away from herself. Look, she's trying to say it's against her child, but no one's blaming the child to go to a private school. No one's even blaming her for sending her own kid to a private school. The problem is that she's fighting against school choice for other families, especially after she called school choice racist just a year before sending her own child to a Catholic school. She further tried to defend her position by saying, well, it's because the public schools don't have enough money. Well, guess what? All data suggests that the public schools have more money than the school she sends her own kid to. The private school she sends her son to has a tuition under $15,000 a year, whereas the Chicago public schools spend about twice that amount, about $30,000 a year. In the system that she pulled her own child out of. It's not a money problem. It's an incentive problem. It's a matching problem between the kid's interest in the school. And a one-size-fits-all system is never going to be able to meet the individual needs of diverse families. Stacey Davis Gates knows it better than anybody else. She's the president of a teachers union, and she won't even send her own child to that institution when it came to her son.
Oh, so is this an extreme case, or is there quite a bit of that going on? How many union officials around the country are fighting against school choice and are sending their own children to private schools? Do you know of any other examples?
This is not an outlier, Paul. It happens so much that when I post about these things, I almost get surprised when I find a politician against school choice who doesn't send their own kid to a private school. It's become kind of a running theme on my Twitter account, now called X account. of exposing politicians for being hypocrites on the issue of school choice. You know, you have one of my first politicians that I had exposed was Elizabeth Warren, actually. She was running for president in the Democrat primary in 2019, and she responded to a survey of all the Democrat candidates from Education Week, Ed Week. And they had asked two questions, pretty basic survey. One, where did you go to school when you were growing up, public or private? And where did you send your kids to school, public or private? Basically, everybody responded to both questions. But one person in particular was an outlier on that survey, at least. Elizabeth Warren said, one, yes, I went to public school in Oklahoma. But then the second response was no comment. She didn't respond to it one way or the other. And so I found on Ancestry.com a yearbook of her son, Alex Warren. He was actually in a private school while she was teaching at UT Austin in Texas. He later on went to a private school in Pennsylvania as well after they moved there. But what was really interesting, after I exposed this on social media, it went pretty viral. I don't think she knew about it yet, but a little bit later, she was at a campaign event, maybe it was like a week later, in Atlanta, Georgia. And there was a mom that came up to her named Sarah Carpenter after the campaign event. And she had basically just asked Elizabeth Warren on video. She said something along the lines of, you know, I just want the same kind of opportunities you had for your kid. I read somewhere, she was talking about my article, that you sent your kids to private school. And then Elizabeth Warren on video very quietly said, no, I sent my kids to public school. So that was a false denial. She did send one of her kids at least to public school, but she said, no, I sent my kids to public school, and tried to hide the fact that she sent her son to private school for the majority of his K through 12 education.
Okay,
and
but that she just continued to the. I just want to let you know, Corey, that the end result of all of this was she was elected the senator from Massachusetts, and she's representing the state in the Senate today. So, you know, all these criticisms, they must have an answer. I mean, is this really hypocrisy, or do they have a justification for this? What are the justifications that political leaders give when they are sort of put under this kind of scrutiny that you're talking right. about?
Yeah, they have a couple defenses, but what, first I'll name a couple more. You got Gavin Newsom in California. Another kind of tidbit on his hypocrisy is that he was complaining about Zoom schooling in California when he supported the school closures that were induced by the unions, while sending his own kid to private school that had an in-person option. So that was peak hypocrisy on Gavin Newsom's part. You have Joe Biden went to private school, sent his kids to private school. The list goes on and on and on.
Well, I got to defend the main argument. I'm going to defend President Biden here. I'm not going to let you get by with this, because I feel like the sons and daughters of a president of the United States are under so much scrutiny that they deserve to have special arrangements for them. I can easily see. You know, even Jimmy Carter, he gets a bum rap in some places, but he was never a hypocrite, as far as I know. And he sent his kids to public school in Washington, D.C. for quite a period mm-hmm. of time. But they had to be accompanied by a Secret Service agent. And it was really and he finally sends them to private school, you know, towards the end of his presidency. But I find it difficult to criticize Mr. Carter.
Yeah, but at the same time, there's a lot of reasons why someone might want a private school. One, maybe because you're in an important position and you want privacy. Another thing could be that the public school that you're zoned for is failing kids with 0% proficiency rates, and that your kid may feel like they're in literal physical danger from going to that institution because of bullying or other reasons. So there's a lot of, you know, excuses we can come up to why it's okay for one person to make a choice and not another. But, you know, I don't blame the presidents or anyone for that matter for choosing a private school. That's not the problem. The problem is by fighting against funding that already exists from going to kids of less advantaged means to have similar opportunities.
Well, let me give you another example. I was in Alaska about a month ago, and I was talking about charter schools. Alaska has exceptionally good charter schools. And I was on a podcast there, and the podcast was run by a senator, a state senator, not a U.S. senator, but a state senator who sent his kids to a charter school. I thought this was going to be an easy podcast. I'd be able to say charter schools are doing well in Alaska, and he'd say, yes, yes, yes. But no, he says, you know, we don't want to expand charter schools because we get the wrong kind of people coming to charter schools. As it is, I have a real nice charter school, and it's a bilingual program, and my kids
learn. They usually don't say that part out loud. This is the kind of the elitist argument against school choice, that they want to protect their own institutions from less advantaged families getting into their schools as well. I mean, when it comes to private school choice, those schools can still have their admissions policies. It's not the same thing with charters, which typically have random lottery admissions. But, you know, if the schools can still have their discipline policies, at least, you shouldn't have an issue with other families getting those kind of opportunities as well. You shouldn't just hope that it's just a carve out for your own family. I mean, in Kentucky, they recently passed a private school choice bill in 2021, their first one. It got struck down in the courts, and now they passed a constitutional amendment through both chambers this year. But on the House floor in 2021, there was a Democrat there who was talking about why she was going to vote against school choice. And she said, well, in Virginia, they're doing this. They have this tax credit scholarship program. She said it was higher income families using that program. I don't think that's true. But then she turned around and said, it's okay. It's working fine for them. They're higher income over there in Virginia. But in here, you know, this is for low income families. Do you think they're going to be able to, quote unquote, shop around for an education, implying that families were, you know, they either didn't have the capability to choose a school for their kid, or they just didn't have the wherewithal or motivation to choose for their kids. Regardless of what the reason was, it sounded like a paternalistic, elitist argument against school choice, and that backfired. It went viral on social media. The bill ultimately passed, didn't need her vote anyway, but it's just a shame that you have so many people with the school choice for me, but not for the hypocrisy.
So how widespread is this? So Heritage Foundation did a study about 20 years ago, which
they found need to do it again.
Has this been done recently?
No, they need to do it again. I don't know how they got so many members of Congress to respond, because your incentive as a member of Congress is to say, you know, if there's no hypocrisy, you're gonna respond to that survey. But if, just like with Elizabeth Warren back in 2019, but if you are a hypocrite and you're against school choice and you send your kids to private school, you're probably not going to respond. So it's probably difficult to do. And even if they do get a survey, if the response rate isn't high enough, it's going to be a lower bound estimate of the true hypocrisy in Congress. But AEI did something, and so did Education Next, did something recently, much more recently. I think in the AEI report was from, what, 2014 or something, and their headline was that school teachers in the public system were about four times as likely to send their own kids to private school than the general population. And that's, you know, if you buy into the argument that school teachers aren't paid a whole lot, well, then it's not because that they were just wealthier than the rest of the average population. That's not why they were, you know, four times the rate sending their kids to private school. It's probably because they have more on the ground knowledge of what's actually happening in those institutions better than anybody else. And so they see firsthand some of the problems. And so, you know, school choice can benefit families, teachers within the public school system too. One, on the employment side, they have more opportunities for, you know, private providers to try to motivate them to switch jobs. And then also it gives their employer, the district, competition should lead to more money going into it to the classroom as opposed to administrative bloat and other frivolous expenses if you are competing in a true market scenario. But then also teachers could also use school choice funding for their own kids.
But how about when you go to a state legislature and you try to, I know you're part of an organization that's trying to pass legislation, Do you try to find legislators who are already sending their children to private school? And do you regard them as likely supporters for this kind of legislation? I mean, is it the case that people who do send their kids to private school are more likely to be supporting the legislation?
I don't know the breakdown of that. I mean, we get a whole swath of politicians who support and who oppose school choice. Some of them, I mean, it almost seems like the opponents are the ones that are more likely to send their kids to private school. But I mean, one of our strongest advocates where I live in Texas, his name is Brian Harrison, a representative who used to work for the Trump administration before he became a state representative here in Texas. He sends all of his kids to public school, and he's one of the most vocal proponents of school choice. On the flip side, we have the leader of the Texas House Democrats, their chair, Trey Martinez Fisher, who's also, he represents a part of, not, he's not my representative, but he, I believe, lives in San Antonio as well, where I live. And he sends both his kids to private school. Everybody knows it. And he is on, when the session was going on and they were debating the bills, he was on social media, it seemed, every single day, making videos and tweeting against school choice. And it almost seems like the louder of an opponent of school choice that you have in front of you, the more likely that they are to send their own kids to private school. I don't know why that is.
Well, do they give any justification when they get called?
Yes.
You know, what do they say?
Yeah. So they, all of a sudden, all of these Democrats who want taxpayers to pay for everything else when it comes to pre-K, higher ed, medical expenses, they become a staunch fiscal conservative, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. They adopt that mentality only when it comes to the in-between years of K to 12 education. And then they'll also say, well, I spent this, I paid for it out of pocket. I didn't defund the public schools, which is not even true, because public schools in large part are funded by the number of students in those schools. And if they send their kid to a private school, whether it's out of pocket or whether it's through a voucher type of scenario, the public school is going to lose some money because they're losing that student regardless of how it's paid for. So there is a financial negative impact on the district from these politicians who pay for it out of pocket. But I mean, it's just so, it's so interesting where you hear these people saying, I paid for it myself. It's a let them eat cake. They'll even say, we already have school choice in Texas. You can already choose private schools if you can afford it. And it's a let them eat cake moment. It's basically they're being like Marie Antoinette saying, you know, it's basically that, let them eat cake. Don't be poor and you can have school choice too.
They're really not that big a concern to us. It's up to them to take care of their problems, not for us to.
But then they want free college and student loan forgiveness. They want free pre-K at a universal level as well. They want the government paying for healthcare. But it goes to show you their defense has nothing to do with logic. Their opposition has nothing to do with consistency, because they support the government or the taxpayer paying for literally everything else except for K through 12. And the only logical explanation is that it has to do with power dynamics, that choice in higher ed and pre-K and everything else doesn't really threaten a special interest like it does in K through 12, where you have the status quo.
So what's the special interest that's threatened?
It's the teachers and superintendents unions within the school system, the American Federation of Teachers, the National Education Association. They get your money regardless of how well they do, regardless of whether they even open their doors for business, as we saw during COVID and when they go on strikes. And they can even use their failures as an explanation as to why they need more money year after year after year. And when you can vote with your feet and take your money elsewhere, well, of course, they're going to be upset about that. And they give their money to the Democratic Party. Randy Weingarten's union, AFT, 99.9% of the campaign contributions from AFT went to Democrats in 2022. And it's been like that for several decades, according to data from the Open Secrets website. It's basically a money laundering operation for the Democratic Party. And some might say the Democratic Party has become a wholly owned subsidiary of the teachers union. It has everything to do with maintaining power, maintaining a monopoly. And for some people, it's about maintaining a monopoly, not just on money.
If teachers have so much power, then how come they aren't paid well? So a lot of conversation is that teachers are poorly paid, and you look at these big salary increases.
You look at the Education Next survey on this. I don't remember the last one that it was pretty recent, but basically Education Next had asked, how much do you think the average teacher makes? And then they showed the actual data of how much the average teacher makes. Well, I believe it was like people thought that teachers made like half as much of what they actually make on average. And the salary doesn't include all of the benefits, the pension benefits and otherwise that won't show up in just a straight salary. And I think that's why the unions push for a lot of non-salary type benefits, so they can continue this narrative of the poor teacher while at the same time enriching their members in non-salary benefits. But another reason could be that the teachers unions aren't as good at advocating for their members as they'd like you to believe. I mean, if you do just look at salaries between 1970 and 2020, according to NCES, National Center for Education Statistics, average per pupil spending in the United States in real terms after adjusting for inflation increased by about 160% since 1970. But the average teacher salary only increased by about 10% in real terms. So you could look at that and say it's going to pensions, or you can look at that. I'm not sure which, it's probably both of these answers, is that the money's not going towards the classroom. Ben Scafidi has done a great couple of reports on this called Back to the Staffing Surge, where the money's going towards administrative bloat and just adding more people to the system as opposed to going towards the people who are already doing a good job in that system. For example, Education Next wrote about this too. I think it was Ira wrote about this. Between 2000 and 2020 or so, the number of students and teachers in the system increased about the same rate, by about 8%. But the number of administrators in the system increased by about 80 or 90%. So when you're a monopoly and you don't have to spend money on the kids or even on your employees very well, you can do things that enrich the union bosses like Randy Weingarten, who make over $500,000 a year. Stacey Davis Gates, according to Illinois Policy Institute data that they reported on her, makes over $260,000 a year just from her one role at the Chicago Teachers Union.
But still, this is not an issue. I mean, so you can sort of say, okay, there's all these scandalous examples of people being hypocrites, but can you give me an example where somebody lost an election because they were revealed to have sent their children to a private school instead of a public school in a contest, in a situation where they had been opposed to choice?
We have polling at the American Federation for Children that we commissioned through Real Clear Opinion Research, and we asked American voters if they would be more or less likely to vote for a candidate who opposed school choice while after sending their own kids to private school. It was something along those lines. And we tried to make it as unbiased as possible in how we worded it. And we found overwhelmingly voters said that they were less likely to vote for a candidate if they were basically school choice hypocrites. We didn't word it in that way, obviously. Barely anybody said that they'd be more likely to vote for a candidate who had done such a thing. That's probably just a margin of error. But it is true that education tends to be one of the lower ranked issues when it comes to voter priorities. I mean, economy and jobs is always number one. Education is probably 9 or 10 on a list of, 10 things. So, but that doesn't mean it always has been that way. Terry McAuliffe in Virginia in 2021, education was the number two issue in that election, according to exit polling. He lost in a state that went 10 points to Biden the year before. The Democrat, Terry McAuliffe, who was a former governor, basically an incumbent in Virginia, he lost to a Republican, Glenn Youngkin, on the issue of education and specifically on parental rights in education after he went on the debate stage and said, I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach, is what the Democrat said, Terry McAuliffe. And Glenn Youngkin ended up winning with education voters by 6 points. Terry McAuliffe was a school choice hypocrite. He didn't get hit very heavily with campaign ads on that issue. I mean, I called it at him out for it repeatedly. So there's some debate about why he lost.
What I hear you saying, Corey, is that this isn't an issue very often, but it always has the potential for being an issue. So any member of Congress or any member of a legislature is going to try to keep their own decisions with respect to their children a private matter if they, in fact, contradicts their public position.
That's right. And we saw that with Elizabeth Warren. It was obviously hidden. It was not very easy to figure it out. You had to literally go to ancestry.com to figure it out and find the yearbooks. And this, you know, Alex Warren is, you know, nearly 50 years old now. So this has been kept under the rug for a very long time. But another example real quick was during the midterms in 2022, Josh Shapiro, he's now the governor of Pennsylvania. He was up in the polls by, I want to say, more than 10 points consistently in the polls against his opponent, Doug Mastriano, who had started calling him a hypocrite on school choice. Doug Mastriano was down. Josh Shapiro went to private school, sent all his kids to private school, and Doug started hitting Shapiro on this issue. And right after that, Josh Shapiro quietly changed his education platform. I found it out, reported it at the Wall Street Journal, and wrote an article about it. And I had the Internet Archive link showing the before and after. Right before the election, he included private school choice. He didn't just say school choice in broad terms. He said Lifeline Scholarships, which was a bill that was run by a Republican in the House that year in Pennsylvania. So if he was trying to just weasel around of something that he could easily back out of later, he obviously didn't do that. He pinned himself into a corner by saying Lifeline Scholarships. And I think it's because he was looking over to Virginia and saying, I don't want to be a Terry McAuliffe. I don't want to. He was able to preempt those accusations of hypocrisy by just supporting school choice. Now, it wasn't full-throated school choice. It was for kids in failing schools. It was a more incremental school choice proposal, but it allowed him to say, hey, I do support school choice for less advantaged families and failing schools. I'm not a hypocrite. And he was able to take that argument away. It was a smart political move. I don't know if he had a true change of heart or not, but it doesn't really matter. For families, it's good news that we're seeing high profile Democrats like Josh Shapiro starting to sway on the issue and at least show public support for school choice. He even went on Fox News last year, reiterating his support for school choice.
Well, thank you very much, Corey. These are all fabulous examples of the way in which political leaders' decisions about their own families and so forth can become a political controversy. And thank you very much for joining me on the Education Exchange.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Paul.
I am Paul Peterson. This is the Education Exchange. I've been speaking with Corey DeAngelis. He's a senior fellow at the American Federation of Children, a school choice advocacy group. Please join me for a new Education Exchange podcast released on the EducationX website every Monday at noon Eastern Time.